Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, talking about Manchester Derby, Crystal Palace for Europe, are you for real? And Mourinho commended by the WHO for continually washing his hands of his players at every opportunity. Midweek, there's Champions League fun. Spurs in for a bumpy trip to Leipzig, what with all the players they'll be driving over. And Liverpool looking for the comeback against Atletico Madrid. Will Alisson be a big miss, like back in Yazoo? We'll be discussing all that in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Well, listener, thanks for joining us. A brand new week and a brand new weekend of football to have a chat about. A chat we'll be having with Michael Cox of The Athletic.
Hi, James.
Daniel Story of The Eye.
Hello, James.
Hi, Daniel. And also Matt Davis-Adams of Lots of Places, Matt.
Hiya.
All right. It was a good weekend for Scottish midfielders. It was a good weekend for one of you guys. Two of you, I don't think, were quite so whelmed by the quality of the football. Is that fair, Michael?
I thought the Manchester Derby we've just watched was a very poor quality game.
It's true. It is Sunday evening. We have literally just finished. We've just switched off with a modicum of disgust the game at Old Trafford. It was a game, though, Daniel, that was saved by two really wonderful goals.
Yeah, and it was won by the team that wanted it more, very obviously wanted it more, and had enough quality eventually just about to make that count. City were, they are frustrating to the point of anger when you watch them play like that. To me, because there are so many good individuals and what should be good combinations on the pitch, and they just frustrate you so much. Because they sometimes, when you watch Manchester United under Solskjaer, you think, what have you been doing in training all week? When you watch Manchester City play like that, you think, Pep's a great coach. What have you been doing all week that's led to this performance in this game?
Well, there are
so frustrating.
There are factors that may play a role in their performance today. One could be UEFA's judgment that is. To an extent, robbed them of some of their motivation, perhaps. The absence of Kevin De Bruyne, the fact that Liverpool are so far ahead that any points they get from these fixtures is academic.
Yeah, maybe, but you become a footballer by having an inordinate amount of competitive edge because you need it to get through academy systems, get through trial systems, get through club systems to get to the top. If you are put off because a team is too far ahead of you to catch them, and that means you stop playing, that isn't good enough. That means you shouldn't be where you are. I don't buy into that, oh, they didn't really care. It looked like they didn't care, which I think is represented in a lack of quality, but it's so frustrating to watch.
And that sort of lethargy or ambivalence toward the rest of their Premier League season might be understandable in every other game bar this one, but when they've got not much to play for in the Premier League, you know, this is essentially the biggest fixture that they've got left in the league between now and the end of the season. So it's one thing to think, well, Norwich at home when, you know, we can't get in the Champions League and we're not going to win the league, we're not that up for this, but Derby at Old Trafford when, as I say, that's it now for your Premier League season.
Was it that they didn't care? Was it that Man United are just too strong now, Michael? 10 games unbeaten in all competitions, only 2 goals conceded in that run.
Yeah, they have got a good record in these big games. I mean, I don't think it was a surprise that they switched to 5 at the back, which is a system they played well in those bigger games. They play on the counter-attack and they do it very well. Bruno Fernandes obviously has given them something different. Maybe wasn't at wasn't the most influential player in open play, but obviously got the assist for the first goal. Yeah, they look a well-drilled side, but I thought City were just so predictable in possession. They didn't have enough threat going in behind, really. I thought, you know, without David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne, they didn't really threaten with passes in behind. Sterling, you know, was completely dominated by Wan-Bissaka, who just never seems to, you know, lose a one-against-one duel. So, yeah, I mean, I thought City were really poor. I agree with Daniel, actually. Like, I'm not a Manchester City fan, but it was actually making me annoyed watching some of their players and the constant mistakes in possession.
Phil Foden, was this a big audition for him in terms of it being a rare Premier League start?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, he was very good in the cup final last weekend. Very quiet here. I think that's natural when you're a youngster and maybe not used to a regular run of games. So it wasn't his best game, but Mahrez wasn't that much better when he came on.
It's interesting to see him picked on kind of, I know he didn't stay there, but basically on the right of that front three or on the right wing. I never thought that was going to be his position. I always thought he would play one of those midfield roles, and that's what David Silva did so well, and he's been touted as the successor. It's all very well giving players minutes, but if you kind of pick them out of position and against a tough opponent, it seems like a little bit of a hospital pass for someone like Foden.
Well, a 2-0 win for Man United could have been more had Fred been given that penalty, which they looked a fair shout for. The first goal scored by Anthony Martial, whose performance at least you were enjoying, Michael, from a lovely dinked free kick. And then a wonderful second goal at the death from Scott McTominay.
Yeah, but there's obviously a caveat with both goals in that the first one came from a free kick, which probably shouldn't have been awarded, and the second one came from an Ederson assist. So it wasn't like it was a hugely convincing win from United, even though they were playing quite meek opposition in the game, but they probably just about won it. But yeah, that McTominay goal was lovely.
Oh, straight to McTominay. There's a goal to shoot at. There's a goal to find. And Manchester United have done the double in the derby. Scott McTominay with an extraordinary finish.
The fact that he bent it around the defender on the way into the net as well. Yeah, ball doesn't bounce before it hits the net. That's always bonus points too. Mm. Lovely.
And Martial was very good, you know, not just his goal, but I thought his all-round game has come on a lot this year. I think he's better with his back to goal. There was one point where he shrugged off Otamendi to an aerial ball. I thought he was just, yeah, excellent. Probably the only, well, definitely the only attacking player on the pitch, really, who can be pleased with his afternoon's work.
I take your points about the Man City's lassitude, but Man United presumably have a role in making City look that bad today.
I think that, as I say, I think I'm not trying to take any credit away from them, but I think that they did what they had to do, which was be better than, as Matt says, meek opposition. Right now, that's plenty enough, especially against a team like Manchester City. The result is king for United at the moment. If they want to get back into the top four or potentially top five, all they need to do is carry on winning, and they won't, you know, Solskjaer won't care one jot about the style right at the moment, because to be honest, Bruno Fernandes is kind of, or has been kind of, looking after that himself. He's been dictating the tempo, and the resilience is the new thing. The ability to grind out those results is the new thing.
Mm. And Solskjaer deserves credit not only for the fact that he's got this great record against Pep, but the kind of palpable quality of where he is obviously good as a coach is with the forwards. You could see that with Rashford before he got injured, with Martial at the moment, and with Mason Greenwood, who's done well for a teenager in his first season in the Premier League whenever he's appeared. So, you know, the kind of stick to beat Solskjaer with was that it was all about nostalgia and sort of up and at him mentality. But actually there is some sort of physical evidence of coaching that he's done effectively, which has been taken into games.
There you go. Next up for Man United, a trip to LASK on Thursday in the Europa League. That's Linz in Austria. Mm-hmm. Man City, meanwhile, the day before, Wednesday, will host Arsenal in the Premier League. City have lost more games than Arsenal in the Premier League this season. I find that remarkable.
Yeah, Arsenal have just drawn a lot. That's why.
Right. I mean, it adds up, I suppose. This is the Arteta derby, of course. Very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that would be interesting to see the dynamic there. Obviously, he knows City inside out. I think a lot of his work at City was looking at the opposition. You know, that was the kind of the role he had on the coaching staff. So he'll be looking at the opposition being City and looking for some weaknesses. And I think we'll find weaknesses in that defence. I mean, that back four today, Zinchenko, Daniel mentioned that Zinchenko wasn't having a great game about 25 minutes in. I just couldn't stop noticing it. But I mean, Otamendi gives you chances. Fernandinho, I like the way he plays, but against certain types of striker, I don't think he's particularly good. And Cancelo hasn't done much to convince me this season. Edison, two errors as well. So, I mean, it's bizarre. We're talking about City, who was so good last two seasons, but all over the place in that defence. Mm. You're looking, you know, we can get in there.
For a manager who, you know, the way they play and the system of play should be now completely ingrained in them. Every time a Manchester City defender got the ball, it looked like they were surprised that they had the ball at the feet. Like, the one thing about City is they've always had options on the ball, and it didn't even look like they didn't know what their next option was, which is pretty worrying, I think, for Guardiola, because he's not going to be able to buy a whole defence this summer. I know that probably isn't his first choice defence, and he will get Laporte back and he would like Mendy back, but a lot of those players have played a lot of games in the title victories in the last two seasons.
Makes you wonder how influential Arteta actually was, because you know, since his departure, seems to correlate with their...
Are you suggesting he might be the Yogi Love to Pep's Klinsmann?
I wouldn't go that far, but certainly he's being missed, I think.
Right. Well, there'll be the reunion on Wednesday. Arsenal coming off a 1-0 win over West Ham. Alexander Lacazette with the goal, which at first wasn't given, but then awarded through VAR. West Ham, the better team, though, I think a lot of the stats seem to indicate in this game. Is that fair?
They had a lot of good chances to win it, but there's a lot of talk about, you know, West Ham being the better team in games at the moment, you know, against Liverpool the other week as well, but they've taken 4 points from six games. They haven't kept a clean sheet since New Year's Day. They score a fair amount of goals, but they've just not got a good enough defence. And actually, for saying that, it was at the other end where they faltered in this game. Antonio and Allaire between them missing chances that should have been taken. They've got enough to stumble over the line, West Ham, I think, but they're not a good team.
Remarkably, Arsenal haven't won a Premier League game outside of London since the opening weekend of the season. This game very much in Manchester. What are your thoughts? Is this where Arsenal's nascent European challenge comes to an end?
Maybe, but I think this is a free shot for Arsenal now. They are unbeaten in seven. Unbeaten in eight, I think. Mm. That's the longest unbeaten run in the top two divisions. So they are in, if not wild, rampant form. They are certainly maintaining and retaining some belief. And I think they should see it as a free shot. I really do, because nobody expects them to take anything. We're used to Arsenal sort of surrendering in these games. And it's a chance for Arteta to say, look, let's change that record. Let's try and look different in these matches.
Is Arteta going to change the record, do you think, on Wednesday, Michael?
I think they'll give City a good game, yeah. Okay. I didn't think Arsenal were very impressive in this game. Like you say, West Ham were the better side. But, you know, with the speed of their forwards, I think, you know, against City's high line and Edison, you know, is renowned as a bit of a sweeper, but is not making good decisions at the moment. So, yeah, I think Arsenal give them a good game.
Okay, what's coming up on Wednesday? Arsenal, with a game in hand, 5 points off the Champions League positions at the moment. So it's kind of on. By the way, if City do lose that game and then at home to Burnley on Saturday, that means that Liverpool will be champions without kicking a ball.
That'd be underwhelming, wouldn't it?
Well, probably not for...
No,
Liverpool
it wouldn't,
fans.
But for the rest of us.
Probably the most incredible title ever won.
Yeah, yeah, well, quite.
But, right, OK, well, let's have a quick palate cleanser and then we'll be back with the other game on Sunday, a pretty convincing Chelsea with a 4-0 win over Everton.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Right, Chelsea 4, Everton nil, if anything. Matt, you were there, and Daniel, you were too. Daniel, you've actually come down with a fever that's sweeping the nation.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm talking about Billy Gilmore fever.
Yes, that's right. Well clarified. Thank you. It isn't just that he is a very good footballer, and that's been said by a lot of people, and that's why Barcelona and Bayern Munich have scouted him. It's the fact that he's got such a composure on the ball. He demands the ball off, you know, high-calibre players. And I think he gave the ball away 3 times in the game. He plays the safe passes when they're needed. He also quickens it up when it's needed. He played one little through or sort of reverse pass through 3 Everton midfielders that genuinely made the shed end sort of ooh and ah. And yeah, they love him, and you can see why.
My favourite tweet here was Adam Hurry, who put speed brackets 1994, but with Billy Gilmore's pass completion dropping below 90%, which is a fabulous thought.
It's all the more extraordinary, you know, when I interviewed him after he came off the bench in the FA Cup at Hull in January. I interviewed him post-match, and you're just looking at a child. You know, he really is a tiny, diminutive little fella, and you think there's no way that this slight young man can boss a game in the way that he has done this week. I mean, Fabinho probably still having nightmares about playing against Billy Gilmore. And Sunday was a different kind of challenge for him against the most ponderous, slow, dreadful set of midfielders I've ever seen in a Premier League game. But yeah, his numbers were fantastic.
Bucolic Field tweeting, as a neutral, I'm really impressed by him. He has the decision-making and intelligence for someone who's played 300 league games. How long has he been kind of bubbling under at Cobham?
Well, interestingly, Frank Lampard did his coaching badges with the Chelsea under-18s a few years ago when Jody Morris was in charge of them, obviously. He's number two now, and Gilmore was in the under-18s then. And Chelsea TV did a feature whereby they got the under-18s players to try and recreate that Gianfranco Zola goal against Norwich, you know, where he kind of back-heel volleys it in at the near post. And nobody could do it except for Billy Gilmore, including Frank Lampard, who had a couple of goes at it. And obviously that's a very minor thing, but it's the kind of thing that you think, he probably thought this kid's got something then. And then when he came back, he used him first of all in the League Cup, and then he got a lot of stick, Lampard and Gilmore actually, at the start of the season when Chelsea played Sheffield United at Stamford Bridge and drew. And Chelsea were going for a winner, and he brought Gilmore on and to almost uproar from a lot of the Chelsea supporters. Who's this kid? Why is he coming on? He looks about 6 stone wringing wet and as if he's just finished his paper round. And on he came and was good in that game and has been excellent ever since. But it's, I think I counted, that's the 7th academy debutant that Chelsea have played this season.
Wow.
Which is extraordinary, really.
Without wanting to crowbar Mourinho stick into this section of the show, it's amazing what difference a player like Gilmore makes to a side with an injury crisis, because basically Chelsea were without their first choice front six today. They had no Kante, no Kovacic, no Jorginho, no Hudson-Odoi, no Pulisic, no Abraham, which arguably next season could be the front six. But by picking someone like Gilmore and him playing so well, it completely changes that narrative, doesn't it? It flips it on his head, and actually everyone leaving Stamford Bridge goes, I can't wait for him to play more. I want him to play more and more and more, which he just wouldn't have got that chance without the injuries, and rightly so, because you can't afford to take those risks.
We ought to spend some time on how bad Everton were in this game.
just to say, I mean, you'd flagged up the fact that it could be a really good week for Chelsea before the game, and this on the back of the Liverpool game, but this is another measure of, it's another level of performance. It felt like the best Chelsea we've seen so far under Lampard, especially given how many absences there were.
Yes.
All the things that have been an issue before, the finishing, the not seeing a game through, that none of that happened.
Yeah, that's
time.
Right. I had comfortably the worst XG conversion ratio, I think is the right wording for it, of any home team in the Premier League this season before today. Almost as big. Kepa's come back and kept 2 clean sheets in as many games, and actually had saves to make. You know, he made 5 saves against Liverpool. So that's important. So Chelsea only kept 9 clean sheets in 42 games in all competitions, and 2 of them have come in the space of a week. So, yeah, there's, with those players out, who Daniel mentioned, there's a couple more as well who are on the sidelines. It's been an excellent week for them.
I mean, for all the talk of the Chelsea youngsters, the front three today is the most cohesive I've seen Chelsea look for a while. And Giroud, Pedro, Willian, 31, 32, 33, all three have their contracts up in the summer. Mm. Giroud, I think, did an interview yesterday or the day before saying he did everything he could to leave in January. So it's a slight contradiction there. I mean, you know, as Daniel says, I think there'll be a radically different front line next season. But I thought they played really well today. Giroud's just, he's the best player in the world at, like, being Olivier Giroud. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I know that doesn't make sense, but like, there's no one who's so good at coming towards play. Those little one touches for on-rushing players. I thought the move for the second goal, the Pedro goal, was just like
what sensational. Was his move on the Pedro goal?
So just did, you know, just came towards play, got the ball between the lines, just touched it to Barkley, and Barkley whipped it in behind the defence. Right. It's a really simple little thing, but Giroud spent the best part of 10 years just doing that and making other players play better. And I kind of love Giroud. I just love watching him.
Yeah, I was so wrong about Giroud. I remember Tom and I having a discussion on the pod a few months back about, and me saying, oh, you know, come on, he's not the reason why Chelsea aren't winning, but he's the first name on the team sheet.
You've always had Bournemouth, Matt.
That's true, yeah.
He's legitimately ahead of Abraham, I imagine now. That injury has actually come at a semi-handy time for Lampard, in that it enables him to keep picking Giroud, which he absolutely should do, without feeling the heat of leaving Abraham out of the team.
All right. They can't play this Everton every week, though. And the Toffees, who embarrassed Ancelotti on his big return to Stamford Bridge with the joint biggest defeat of his career. He also had a 4-0 against Atletico Madrid in the derby when he was at Real.
You might disagree. I think Jordan Pickford was their best player.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't at fault for any of the goals, no. I didn't think. And you felt for him as the game went
so
on.
So, given how the arrival of Duncan Ferguson and then Ancelotti had restored Everton into a proper kind of middleweight Premier League side, combative, always in fixtures and that. What happened this time? Was it Seamus Coleman being out? What?
Well, I don't know, because Sidibe was probably the worst player.
Who was the best player when the teams played at Goodison in December? He was
Sidibe.
He was great in that game. In this game, he looked like a clown running through a minefield. It was bizarre to watch him kind of. It was one moment in front of Ancelotti after he'd given the ball away 10 times in the first half. It rolled onto his foot just in front of the dugouts and literally just bounced over his foot. And, you know, Ancelotti, who's quite this mild-mannered chap, just flung his arms out in frustration. You know, who is this goof and what is he doing?
But it's a remarkable image, Matt, because clowns, presumably, with the especially outsized footwear.
Yeah.
That's the point,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah.
And nothing worse.
Exactly. But yeah. I almost feel like that's not as bad. Sidibe had a bad game,
maybe,
and that can happen to players.
Maybe a scuba diver, actually.
Yeah.
Because you've got
skis. Yeah. And the face
skis.
Mask.
Skier.
Yeah. Yeah, face mask is the X factor, I suppose, as well. But yeah, Sidibe was bad, but players have bad games. But people like Gylfi Sigurdsson, who it was sad to watch him, somebody who's been a legitimate, excellent Premier League player at points in his time, and he was so far off the pace, it was embarrassing. The game completely passed him by. I had to double-check my notes that he's 2 years younger than Pedro, because Pedro was zipping about, like it was the first game of his career, and Sigurdsson looked like he wanted to be anywhere else, and the rest of the Everton midfield, Tom Davis, I'm not convinced by him at all.
Yeah. When he hasn't progressed, I was looking up Tom Davis. I mean, he's played nearly 100 games in the Premier League. He's played more games than Harry Winks or someone like that. And we still think of him as a bit of a youngster, but I thought he was just bypassed so often today. And he was a player they really needed to play well, because he brings the energy that they just don't have anywhere else in the midfield zone. You know, Gomez, I think we can give a bit of a free pass to after missing so long. But I agree with you about Davis. I've been quite disappointed by his lack of progress.
Ross Barkley, anyone to give a bit of a shout out to Ross Barkley? Forgotten man, Stamford Bridge.
He played well, but he also played dismally against Bayern Munich, and that was the level that Ross Barkley demanded to be judged at, and I don't think he's good enough for that level. I think he's a good Premier League midfielder, but I mean, he should be now legitimately behind Billy Gilmore, I think, in the queue. So if you're already missing three central midfielders, then I don't see him starting regularly at Chelsea next season.
There's a lot of players who are, I'd call, confidence players, and Barkley's definitely one of those. If his first touch in the game is good, he can have a good game. If he doesn't get involved in the opening 10-15 minutes, you don't see him at all, but he's had a great week. I mean, he was desperate to score in this game, desperate. He was shooting from everywhere. It was quite funny. Obviously got that brilliant goal against Liverpool, but yeah, he's, as Daniel says, I think if everybody's fit, he's probably not in the first choice team, but then he looks nailed on for the Euros squad, which is odd.
Right, well, that was Sunday's action. Next up, we're looking forward to those Champions League midweek fixtures. Woof.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's new racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. Tune in for analysis, interviews and a bit of crack from the greatest trio since the Bee Gees. Ha, 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 ha. From the Horse's Mouth. From the Horse's Mouth. Ha, ha, yeah.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
That's right, listener, we're rubbing our hands together like they had anti-back gel on them for the return of the Champions League this midweek, Tuesday and Wednesday, and then, of course, Europa League on Thursday. You've got Valencia taking on Atalanta, the Bergamaschi 4-1 up from the first game at San Siro. Paris Saint-Germain, their return leg against Borussia Dortmund, who won the first game 2-1. In Dortmund. Of course, you've also got two Premier League sides who are trying to recover from 1-0 deficits from the first leg. Liverpool, who host Atletico Madrid, and Tuesday's clash of Spurs at Leipzig. Leipzig only drew 0-0 at Wolfsburg this weekend. So it's the second draw in a row. The title push is faltering a little bit, but their Champions League challenge looks pretty good after that 1-0 win at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium 3 weeks ago. What do you think of Spurs' prospects? No, Daniel's making faces.
I really don't. Probably the big off-field narrative or story of the weekend was Jose Mourinho's, I think we can call it a lambasting of Tanguy Ndombele.
He never actually named the player he was talking about, but you're confident.
Well, he did say record signing, which rather gives the game away.
And he said all the players it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very, very Mourinho. I mean, look, Ndombele should not be free from criticism. I think his fitness level does look poor, and that's odd. And it should be said that Leon fans said if there is an issue with him, it's that maybe he takes a long time to get back to fitness after injuries and stuff. But I don't see how lambasting him in public is going to help. But if that's the best way you think he will react to that, then great. But with a must-win game in Europe this week, you basically can't pick him now if you're saying he's not fit. So, I don't know. It just seems a very odd move.
Mourinho does this a lot, quite often with Ndombele. I mean, he's done it 3 or 4 times with him this season, but a variety of other players as well. Eric Dier.
Luke Shaw.
Dele Alli, of course, recently. But I was wondering about this. People say it doesn't help. Other managers don't do it. Is this to do with the fact that Mourinho was never a player himself, do you think?
I don't think so. I think it's a part of his managerial makeup. I think it's part of his personality. I think he He likes to do that. He might feel that it's a way of energising the squad to try and help Ndombele be better. I don't think it necessarily always comes from a negative point. But
pretty much all other managers, who pretty much all have been footballers, don't think it's going to help players. And crossed my mind that maybe it's, you know, had he been on the end, wrong end of some managerial criticism, he might have changed his mind. Anyway, he warmed up his Spurs team for the trip to Leipzig by testing out a bold new five centre-halves formation away at Burnley for a 1-1 draw. A valuable point for someone?
Game of two halves.
A game of two halves.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, Burnley let Spurs back into the game with a ridiculous challenge from Ben Mee, which started 20 yards away from where he actually made contact with the player to concede the penalty. But Burnley
should... commentator say that's a poor challenge from me.
Yeah. Yeah, the job does have some perks, and that's one of them. But Burnley should have been out of sight, really, by half time. It just all comes back to Mourinho for me, and it comes back to when we did the special pod when he was appointed, and I sort of wondered whether he was in tune with modern footballers. And you think, you know, back 2004 to 2007, players at Porto and Chelsea maybe like being shouted at and, hey, you know, we're all men, this is how men act. Well, it's 2020 and the world's a different place now, and people don't want to be treated like that. They don't respond to it. So his job is to evolve with that and learn how to deal with these sort of 20 to 25 year old millionaire footballers who don't want some bloke shouting at them and telling the whole world that he thinks they're useless at their job.
Mm. Spurs, we all know, without Kane and Son, but as you point out, Daniel, the area of the pitch where they look least organised is actually at the other end, the defence, where they don't have any injuries.
Yeah, and they look better after half time. I think the five central defenders.
When he made his changes, when he taken off Ndombele,
and Dier actually looked pretty good in central midfield, although I don't know if he's a perfect fit anywhere. But yeah, that's not good enough. I mean, Manchester United, if you were going to choose their two most important players at the start of the season, you'd probably have said Rashford and Pogba. They've been injured for most of the season. Chelsea, as we've already said, are without potentially a whole front six. It isn't good enough just to say, oh, we're missing these players. You know, City have been without Laporte and Sané, and Aguero's been in and out. It's not good. You can't just say, oh, we haven't got the players, so sorry. I think, what did he say? He said, if the opposition scores first, then we won't win games. It's like,
and the first half, we didn't have a midfield. I didn't see that one about if they score first. That's quite
worrying. Was a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, okay, Chelsea, yeah. I think.
Yeah, he also said, as GTR63 points out, that he couldn't focus on both Burnley and Leipzig. So presumably, having drawn at Burnley, he's pinning everything on the win away in Germany?
I guess so. I thought that was a relatively interesting thing to say. I mean, I assume he means because they play such different styles of football that you need to play two completely different ways. I kind of got that comment, but most of what he's come out with is incredible. And it's not just the results, it just now seems like the mood at Tottenham has just transformed so much. And you've just had, like, you know, all these little comments come up, people seemingly, you know, complaining about the new stadium and stuff, which, you know, this time last year we were saying, wow, what an incredible stadium this is. They've adapted so well. But it's just, you know, so much doom and gloom
Spurs
there.
Spurs fans, because I heard Duncan having a go at it here on Thursday, but are Spurs fans having a go at the stadium?
Well, there have been some grumblings.
Have there?
Yeah.
You should have put the fromagerie in. That would have changed things.
Yeah, the cheese room.
Right.
We know this always happens, but the way that fan base has already become so extremist in the pro or anti-Mourinho camps, the way he does that, that in itself cannot be healthy to have automatically...
The pro, and it's worth giving it a quick airing,
yes.
The pro view is, but Spurs were this bad before Mourinho arrived, and that was with Kane and Son.
Yeah, and with them next season, they could be better. But there are already rumours that Kane may choose to leave this summer. They have had Kane and Son for games together. They have had Kane and or Son for games together and looked poor. And it doesn't explain the defensive disorganisation. It doesn't define the fact that they keep changing formations. And it doesn't define why Mourinho says, for example, we haven't got a midfield and we can't score if the opposition score. That's not good enough.
Mm. And I want the season to be over and start next season when you're still in three competitions.
Just, I think we could all get on board with that. Right, Liverpool. As I mentioned, they're also in Champions League action this midweek at home to Atletico Madrid, who hold a precious one-goal lead from the game at the Wanda Metropolitano. Michael, what are your thoughts?
I think it'll be quite tough for Liverpool, actually. Atletico is so good defensively. I guess the one caveat is... You know, it's the type of game where people mockingly make references to like old famous European night at Anfield, and then they do actually pull out something extraordinary from the bag.
Well, they do have this incredible record, and Bournemouth was another example of that. What was it, 22nd straight victory at home in the Premier League? But the last Champions League appearance they made at Anfield, they actually drew 1-1 with a well-organised Napoli side. So, you know, I mean, a 1-1 scoreline this week would be disastrous.
Yeah, I just it was a very obvious thing to say when they're trying to overturn a 1-0, but that early goal will be absolutely massive. If they can score in the first, like the Barcelona game, if they can score in the first 30 minutes, then the whole picture of the tie changes, because then Atletico are just holding on to stay in the tie. They're not holding on to win it. And if they then have to push forward again, that's what they've struggled to do under Simeone this season. So, yeah, just holding out for as long as they can. And also, Roberto Firmino maybe taking a chance, because he missed another golden one on Saturday. He's gone 53 shots at Anfield this season without scoring, which
good
is
Lord.
A lot for a striker of his quality.
Is. Mm. And what about the absence of Alisson?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for me. The defence has looked really ropey. I mean, obviously it wasn't a first choice side they played when I saw them at Stamford Bridge the other week. And though Adrian conceded a poor goal in that game, it's more the impact on the defenders in front of him in terms of trying to play out from the back and kind of dilly-dallying and getting it wrong. And, you know, in the Bournemouth game, that the goal that Bournemouth scored should have been disallowed, obviously, but it was notable
should it?
That...
Should it? Oh, so this is Callum Wilson running back, and he shoves Joe Gomez.
Just pushing somebody just over and carrying on with the game.
Push. Yeah. I mean, what is VAR doing if it's not disallowing that? I thought it was obvious on first glance.
Yeah.
I mean, Daniel made a good point when we were chatting about it before. I mean, I won't steal your point.
But I mean, that's the problem we have, is that the referee thinks, well, that might probably push, maybe, whatever. I'll leave it for VAR to look at. And VAR decides it can't look at it to overturn it.
Because it's not like clear that, and obvious, I think.
Yeah, but again, if Gomez goes down there, he definitely gets a free kick. The fact that he stays on his feet means that VAR should go, well, we've given him the benefit of the doubt for staying on his feet, but it is clearly a foul. It's obviously a foul.
For all of that, was the bigger problem how casual Liverpool looked even after Wilson had continued playing on and the cross had, the ball to come back across?
A little bit. It was an unusual situation, I thought, because it was, you know, quite a direct attack, and then suddenly Bournemouth had their two central midfielders creating overload
but
down the right.
Not just that, through the game as a whole.
Through the game, okay.
Yeah, did you not feel that Liverpool looked like their heads weren't quite as focused as they had been, say, a month ago?
Despite James Milner's pre-match which got so much love.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that, you know, literally every team, one player does that before
caused
a game.
Jake Humphrey hashtag-asm, didn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed this.
The BT cameras picked up in the warm-up James Milner saying to the Liverpool players,
straight away, as soon as we lose it, there's bodies round it, and then we play out that area, right? Everything we do, highest tempo today. No matter what, who scores, we score, they score, we lift it again, eh?
Jake Henry treated it like it was Martin Luther King.
But it was, I mean, I
Milner,
was
who
was really...
inspired, no doubt, by his own words, then pulled off one of the season's great goal line clearances.
Yeah, and it made me think he needs to get some love, because it's 17 years since he made his debut, and bar a six-game loan at Swindon, that's all been in the Premier League.
He went to Swindon?
Yeah, on loan, yeah, from Leeds in his second season, 2002-03. But think how long he's been playing in the Premier League.
The dream is, and I say this, dreaming very much in inverted commas for my club loyalty, but Leeds going up and him going to Leeds next season for a season in the Premier League would be really nice, I think.
Mo Salah made his 100th Premier League appearance for Liverpool and scored his 70th goal, which, as you've probably read, is the most any Liverpool player has registered in a century of league matches. Outside of Liverpool, by the way, there's only one player who has scored more goals in his first 100 games, and that is, of course, Alan Shearer. Mo's got 70. Shearer did 79. Woof. Jordan Henderson back training, I think. He was due to be back training this weekend with a view to being available for the Atletico Madrid game.
Somebody tweeted us asking for a Player of the Year shout, and I think his absence has kind of strengthened his claim to be Player of the Year in the last couple of weeks.
Atletico Madrid, by the way, this weekend only managed a 2-2 draw with Sevilla. We'll hear more about that and their preparations and prospects for the Champions League, and of course all the other Euro ties and news from the games that actually did manage to go ahead on the continent. In Tuesday's edition of the Totally Football Show, which, as you know, probably has a bit of a European flavour. Up next here on this one, we're going to go and look at Saturday's action, which was, Duncan Alexander suggests, the most wasteful day ever recorded in the Premier League.
Listeners, as you well know, this is the part of the show when you usually hear an advert for something like razors, beer, mattresses, little blue pills, or quite possibly even something to do with gambling. Now, these adverts mean, of course, that we can keep giving you this show for free. So what would be really helpful for us is if you can please head on over to thetotallyfootballshow.com/win/survey. There you will indeed find a survey that we've put together with our friends at Audioboom, and it's all about the sort of things you like so that we can get the right companies advertising to you. It'll take 5 minutes and we won't share your data with anyone. We just need an email address to let you know if you're one of the lucky winners of a £50 Amazon voucher. So help us to help you over at thetotallyfootballshow.com/win/survey. You could even do it while you listen to this next bit. On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
That's right, listener. XG 18.6, goals 9. Apparently, that is the biggest gap that a set of matches has ever had in the since Duncan bothered compiling these stats.
Yeah, 2013. Football didn't start in 2013. Right. James?
but ever recorded, I guess. Not that ever happened, but ever recorded, I guess. That's the kind of get out there. But did it feel wasteful watching it Saturday?
Felt very low wattage in terms of a day of Premier League action. Yeah, it was quite underwhelming all around.
But well, let's talk
about it anyway.
Not if you're a Newcastle fan, though. Hey, Matt, because of the bottom seven, and Villa still have to play, they're going to be at Leicester Monday night. Newcastle were the only team to win. You don't sound excited about that.
Oh, I was. I thought Brucey was on cracking form. Loved it, yeah.
They scored their first league goal in over a month.
Nice goal as well.
Yeah. They had a penalty that was saved by Alex McCarthy, who had a great game for Saints. And then after almost five games without a goal in the league, Saint-Maximin turned on the afterburners. Michael, you're a big Saint-Maximin fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is now, aren't they? I can't imagine anyone not liking him. He's fun, good celebration here, I thought. And yeah, he's just, you know, he's direct and maybe should score more goals. You can say the same of pretty much every Newcastle attacker. But yeah, they were good. I quite like watching Dwight Gayle in this game. He's a funny player. His finishing wasn't great in this game, but his movement's excellent. I mean, the runs he makes is just really enjoyable to watch. I think he's certainly a better option than Joe Ellington, who's just struggled to impact games at all, I think.
Should be said, Bruce is, I've criticised him a lot on this show this season, but the formation changes really helped Newcastle. He's gone from the back five. He did it before the Burnley game, which they drew 0-0, but I think in their last two Premier League games, they've created something like 13% of their, or had 13% of their shots for the season in the last two games.
Wow.
Because they've gone with a 4-4-1-1 or 4-3-1 or whatever, but basically getting in Almiron closer to a striker and obviously Saint-Maximin on the wing. And yeah, they do look better for it. They really do.
Right. And Shelvey in as well.
Yeah, so Shelvey is one of those two who has signed a new deal this week as well. So sticking around, looks like.
Nice.
Which probably sounds like Bruce will keep his job over the summer, any takeover dependent, because he's clearly calling the shots on those deals.
Interesting. If you're not all fired up for Newcastle, Matt, how do you feel about Crystal Palace, where there's a brand new contract for Roy Hodgson and three wins and three clean sheets in a row, and oh my word, they're only 4 points off Europe.
Ruthlessly efficient, I would class them as. They've only scored more than once in a game once in 2020, and bizarrely that was at Manchester City in a 2-2 draw. But yeah, three wins in a row, as you say. I remember, feels like a couple of weeks ago, saying Palace might get dragged towards relegation, but just goes to show what a couple of sort of...
Shows you can't pick relegation teams, doesn't it?
Well,
maybe they were. Yeah. I say 4 points. They're a whopping 12 points off the drop, so...
Yeah, three big... I mean, Gary Cahill's been a great signing for them, but I know that Daniel's a big Jordan Ayew guy, and yeah, he's got his best ever Premier League goals total with, 10 games of the season left?
Yeah, he scored 8 goals, and they've been worth... This is a little bit of a false stat, and I don't normally like it, but they've been worth 14 points to Palace. So he scored 3 winners and an equaliser already in 2020 in the league. And he should never be there. You know, he should never be playing. They wanted Alexander Sorloth to be that guy. They wanted Christian Benteke to be that guy. They probably wanted Cenk Tosun in January to be that guy. They bought Ayew for £2.5 million from Swansea last summer, and he's scored 8 goals and will keep them in the Premier League. So fair play to him.
I think Benteke's done all right as well in recent weeks. I mean, his back-to-goal work's been excellent. He doesn't score many goals, we know that. But I think he's actually helped to bring out the best from Ayew and Zaha, who almost feels like, you know, slightly more peripheral than he was. I mean, last season he said if they lose Zaha, they'll really struggle. But looks a bit more cohesive in terms of their attacking, albeit, that you know, that attacking isn't particularly prolific. But I think they're a really good side, Palace. Well organised, and they've got lots of quite underrated players. I really like James McArthur. I think he's really, really good midfielder.
I get confused by James McArthur because he's from that kind of miasma of McArthur, McCarthy. Mm. There's always in the Premier League a confusing number of players with a similar...
Well, they play for the same team, don't they? Yeah. Which is, for the in third, the same position.
For the third time, they've been in the same team as well.
So, which one is he?
The good one.
Yeah.
The one who's not as injury prone as the other one might.
All right.
Might be a charitable
There's
way.
No tinge of ginger in his hair, and there is a tinge of ginger in James McCarthy's.
Watford aren't doing very well, are they? You know, that Liverpool win feels like a bit of an aberration. One win in seven for Watford, and it's all looking a bit dicey for them, I think. Well, only at the relegation zone on goal difference.
Yeah, and Villa, who are down in there, have two games in hand on them. So, Ricardo Mantio says, has the job Hodgson has done at Palace perhaps been less recognised than the Dyches and Wilders of this world, would you say?
Yeah, he took over when they'd lost the first four games of the season and seemed to be going in a completely different direction under Frank de Boer, and, you know, kept them up, has turned it around. And yeah, now they're looking up the table rather than looking over their shoulders. Mm. So he's done a great job. I mean, for him to... I know his age is mentioned a lot and it kind of gets a bit tedious, but I think he's a really impressive guy, you know, that he can relate to, you know, players in their early 20s. We talk about someone like Jose Mourinho, who now seems kind of out of touch with how you speak to players. I don't think Hodgson has that problem at all. Sometimes you'll give him stick for, you know, defensive tactics or whatever, but he seems to be able to get through to players. And, you know, there was a good interview with Cahill, I thought, on Match of the Day, where he was talking about how much, you know, they enjoy working under him. And yeah, I think it's a great story back at his first ever club at the age of 72. I think it's brilliant.
Ed Quoth Raven wants to mention his age as well. Can it be acknowledged that the Premier League potentially barring over 70-year-olds from attending games means Palace could be without their manager? Right.
Yeah, I think they might find an exception.
Right. But that is genuinely one of the ideas that's being floated for...
Yeah, there will be a meeting on Monday to discuss where the Premier League moves forward. I personally cannot fathom why, if there's even a case of football playing a role in spreading the disease, why, how on earth you can ever let fans in or even play the games if that's an issue. This is, you know, I love football and it is thankfully my livelihood, but there are some things that are bigger than football, and the spread of a pandemic would seem to be one of them. But yeah, obviously it's not my call, but I suspect they'll try and muddle on a little bit. But yeah, over 70s banning, I don't get that, because those over 70s don't go to the game, but then presumably meet the people that have gone to the game and picked up the virus. So it's an odd one.
I mean, I don't want to be flippant about it because it's a serious situation, but do we have to take ID along? Seriously.
Yeah, that's a fair
point.
Know,
imagine if you're like 50 and you get ID'd going into a game because you're suspected to be over 70. That'd be difficult.
Right, I'm moving on. Sheffield United beat Norwich 1-0. Billy Sharp with his third goal in four games. Dean Henderson at the other end shutting down the Canaries. Incredible series of saves from Dean.
England's number one, as they keep chanting.
Is he now, don't
I think he's got his... Well, potentially, going back to our last point, what could scupper him is that if England's friendlies in March are postponed, which the Italy one surely must be in huge doubt, that might well do for him, because I don't think Gareth Southgate would start him in the first game of a major tournament fresh. He might start him in the friendlies and he might play his way into the team. So that could be a deciding factor. But he's definitely the English goalkeeper in the best form, I think.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, the argument is, well, Pickford's better at playing out from the back and England like to play that way. But I'd always rather my goalkeeper was the best at making saves available to me than do anything else. But Sheffield United, you know, Chris Wilder said after the game, maybe we're not the underdogs anymore, maybe it's not a surprise. But it's worth reiterating that the only teams who have beaten them in 2020 are Liverpool and Manchester City. And, you know, they played a team who they came up with here, and the contrast in the two seasons that they've had is stark.
Just on that distribution point, a funny stat is that the two players in the Premier League with the worst pass completion rates are Henderson and Pope. So, you know, obviously it's going to be goalkeepers, but it does underline the fact that, you know, if distribution's an issue, you're going to two goalkeepers who are just used to hoofing it long by and large. Mm. So it is a bit of an issue.
But is that not a consequence of the style that their team play as much as it is their ability to pass?
Absolutely, but it means for 38 games, you know, they're just not playing the right style. And I think that is a slight issue. I think Pickford's distribution is maybe a bit overrated, actually. I think it can look good on highlights, but sometimes when you watch a 90-minute game, it just gives the ball away quite a lot.
But the style of his kick looks cool, doesn't it?
Oh, that's absolutely, it. Yeah.
Wolves, the other Premier League game this weekend, a goalless draw between Wolves and Brighton. Only two shots on target in the whole match, actually, one for each side. Brighton remain the only Premier League team yet to win in 2020. Wolves, meanwhile, will take their disappointment and bag it up and head off to Greece, where they will be taking on Arsenal slaying Olympiakos.
Without any of their 1,100 fans that have bought tickets, because that one's been confirmed as no away fans.
Oh, really?
Yes, which has understandably caused some angst amongst Wolves supporters who have already paid for travel and tickets.
And, right. Yeah. And presumably there's a similar possibility for all the midweek European games.
Yeah, I think so. As I say, there should be. This is bigger than football, and you can't just go, well, we'll put it on. It's like this handshake thing. You can't just... It's not like a virus gets scared if you put on a little show at the start of the game and then goes, all right, we won't bother infecting anyone in there. Mm. I can't believe that football is still sort of carrying on as normal.
I do fear how some of these seasons are going to be sorted out. Mm. You know, especially in Italy where, the, you know, the, it's not the major issue, obviously, but when you marry it with comments from Agnelli earlier in the week, you know, who was talking about basically how big clubs deserve to get what they want. If this season's suspended with 10 games left, I don't know. There's going to be some very difficult decisions to make, and I don't really trust football to do things fairly, sadly.
Mm. On Wolves, by the way, in this game, they're the big losers in terms of the Champions League chases this weekend, aren't they? Because at Brighton at home, if you're going for the top four, is a game that you should win with something to spare, not draw 0-0. And when Sheffield United and Chelsea and Man United and even Arsenal all pick up wins, that's really is two drop points.
That Champions League chasing situation, by the way, if you take it from Leicester, who are in third but have still to play from this round, they are now just 2 points ahead of Chelsea in fourth and only 5 points ahead of Manchester United, which is still a margin, but, you know, it's not entirely a comfortable one given the run of form they've been on. And then from Manchester United in fifth, which is probably Champions League, down to Arsenal in ninth, you've got United, Wolves, Sheffield United, Spurs and then the Gunners all within 5 points. So, you know, that's where your excitement lies at this point, no?
Yeah, relegation's fairly exciting too, but yeah.
Too exciting.
It would be more exciting if we knew if it was fourth or fifth that was going to get you in the Champions League. So if we can get, you know, Caster to hurry up a little bit, that would be tremendously helpful.
Mm. Any idea on when those hearings are going to take place?
It will be after the end of the season, I would imagine. So it will cause a really weird mood. Let's say Wolves or Sheffield United even finish fifth. Mm. They can't go out and buy players preparing for Champions League football because they don't really know if they'll be in it or not.
Right. Well, in a second or two, we're going to wrap up with lots of Football League news, dramatic tales of Coventry and Leeds, and some other stuff as well. Right now, though, let's get some odds from producer Ben, who's talking to Paddy Power.
A very good morning to you, listeners. I'm on the line with Lee Price from Paddy Power because, you know, that's how we roll. Lee, there's a big game on Wednesday night. It's Man City versus Arsenal, the Mikel Arteta derby. What's going to happen here, please?
Yeah, I suppose it is quite a big game for Arsenal and Arteta, at least. Mikel Arteta going back to have a look at the silverware he could have won while Arsenal try and maintain their hunt for Champions League qualification, having bottled the Europa League. Bit harsh, maybe. The odds don't paint a positive picture, though. Arsenal are quite extraordinary, 8-1 to win this game. And even the draw is 4-1. Well, Man City are comprehensive 2-7 favourites. We think we know how this one's going.
As we've been discussing at length, the Champions League returns, of course. What are the odds, please, on Liverpool and Spurs, last year's two finalists, going out at this stage?
It's more difficult to back Tottenham this one than it is for Jose Mourinho to back Tanguy and Ndombele. We make it 1-7 they go out, which is an implied probability of 87.5%. Even that seems generous to Spurs to me at this stage. We give Liverpool a better chance, obviously. They were the best team in history until recently. They're odds on to beat Atletico at Anfield, but we still make the Spanish club favourites to progress at 3-4. So stick that together with Leipzig progressing and you can get evens on both English teams being knocked out.
And finally, Wolves in the Europa League. Can they get something at Greece when they take on Olympiakos on Thursday?
This is incredibly tight in terms of the betting on the night. We give Olympiakos the edge, but only by something like 1%. It's going to be really, really close. The Greek side are 13-8 to win the first leg and the draw is priced at 2-1. A Wolves win away from home, and that's a phrase I've heard a lot over the last two seasons. You can get odds of 17-10 on that. And we do make Nuno's men favourites to go through. they're 1-2 to progress.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the funds stop, stop. Mark Davison. Ooh, here's one to spring on you. I suspect this might be a Duncan Alexander special. Mark Davison would like stats for short corners. Cause, says Mark, I've never seen a goal from one, and yet teams still do them. So it must work sometimes, or you wouldn't do them. Yeah. What do you think?
I mean, there was a really good video going around yesterday of a brilliant one from Polish top flight, I think, that was a brilliant passing move. I mean,
how did that one work? What was the setup there?
It was basically a very intricate passing move involving four players, I think, and working the ball into a good position. I mean, I understand they are frustrating. I think City played a couple of really dreadful ones today where, you know, they just work it to a position 30 yards out and then cross it from there, which doesn't seem to help anyone. But
What's the appeal of them?
Well, the idea is you don't actually score. The point is you don't actually score very many from corners delivered into the box.
Right.
So by taking it to open play, the club feel that they can have more control over the move, I guess.
You can quite often create a better angle for a cross, can't you? If the corner taker plays it short to somebody and then moves into a position where they're more level with the edge of the penalty area, you've got a better angle to pick somebody out. But they are, as supporters, they are frustrating because they always don't seem to end well. But then how many times do you see a corner hit the first man when it's sent in direct? And that's just as frustrating.
I think as a supporter, it's almost like you want the half second of excitement that something might be about to happen as much as the
goal. Hangs in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, you're hosting the Totally Football League show.
Sure am.
On Wednesday. All sorts to talk about there. Forest hosting Millwall. That was on Friday, wasn't it? Somebody scored a 13-minute hat-trick. So
yeah, good thing about hosting is you've got a little bit of editorial control over it, so I'm pretty sure that won't feature. I mean, Friday, we're recording the show on Wednesday. It'll be old news by then. So that won't be in. But we will probably be talking about Leeds, who are back at the top of the Championship. They've been Huddersfield. That's because West Brom drew at Swansea. Brentford, the other big winners in the promotion race, they beat Sheffield Wednesday 5-0. When Brentford are good, they are sensational. If they come up into the Premier League next year, it'd be a great story in their new stadium, but they play a really, really nice style of football.
Five, and Watkins and Bamrama didn't score any of them, which is... They do share the goals around nicely.
Mm. Big win for Middlesbrough. Jonathan Woodgate been under a lot of pressure. Won at Charlton to send Charlton into the bottom three. With Borough moving out, and actually all three promoted teams from League One are in the relegation places now, which is kind of a bit of a shame, really, I guess.
Further down in League One, Adam Etheridge would like to know, what on earth is happening at Coventry City? Is this, asks Adam, one of the signs of the forthcoming apocalypse?
I think Mark Robbins is one of the most underrated managers in the EFL. I think he's done a really good job wherever he's been, but this is an extraordinary situation. You know, Coventry have been this horrible club to observe from the outside. Everything that's happened to them in the last few years, this row they got with the owners.
Right.
They're not playing in their own stadium this season. This is the second time in recent memory that's happened. They played at Northampton for a whole season. Now they're at St Andrews, which is 34 miles, I think, away from Coventry. And yet they're 7 points clear at the top of League One. They're 14 games unbeaten. They've got some really good players like Matt Godden, who's a Totally Football League show favourite. And in a race below them, which is so tight in League One, there are 3 points between second and eighth in that division. Wow. And Coventry, who effectively don't play home games, have managed to pull themselves clear at the top.
And the background to this, 7 points clear at the top now.
Yes.
The background to this is that it's a half a century since Coventry have managed to finish in the top five of their division. Just an extraordinary 50-year run of never being in there. And that's finally going to end.
And I mean, they've been in League Two in recent times as well. And, you know, viewers of Premier League years will enjoy Coventry as that sort of early 90s team who picked up some good results. Had a great team at time with like Darren Huckabee and Gary McAllister and players like that. So to see them in the state that they are in off the pitch is saddening. But what they're doing in League One under who I think is a brilliant Football League manager is kind of heartening, but you don't want it to be, well, they've done all this work, got promoted, and then they're still not playing in their own ground next season. There's got to be some way to sort that out, because their ground is a good Championship ground. You know, the Ricoh Arena, it's a fairly new, 10, 15 years old, something like that.
How could that be resolved?
They need new owners, essentially.
Yeah, I think the club would need to be sold for that to be ironed out, basically.
Because the owner of the arena won't allow...
This is a very simplified version, but effectively the owners of the club, Sisu, have fallen out spectacularly with the owners of the stadium, which is London Wasps Rugby Club. And the relationship has broken down so badly that it doesn't look like there'll be an agreement.
When Richard Keys is criticising somebody else's behaviour and he's right, there's a problem.
You can leave that bit in.
Anyway, all of that and much more coming up. And some more in the Totally Football League show on Wednesday. As I mentioned, Tuesday's Totally Football show will also feature, well, will essentially be all about European football. What's happening with the midweek games? What's the situation with the leagues? Also, things like the Copa del Rey, which is going to have its first all-Basque final. Well, the first one, rather, for 93 years. Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao are going to be facing each other. Alvaro is going to be very excited about that. He's a big Athletic fan. PSG, ooh, their game against Strasbourg was the first one in Ligue 1 to be called off because of the coronavirus. Other games in Ligue 1 did go ahead. Julien will be telling us all about that. And finally, they played the Derby d'Italia Sunday night in Italy. We'll reveal all in Tuesday's show. Excellent. Well, that's kind of it for today's Totally Football show. More on the way, as we mentioned. Michael, have you got a busy week lined up? Which fixture most has you counting the hours?
I'm looking forward to Liverpool Atletico. Yeah. I think that'd be really interesting to see how Liverpool go about things, see Atletico's level of attacking threat in a game where obviously a clean sheet takes them through, but just one goal really makes Liverpool's life very difficult. So, yeah, that's the one I'm up for.
Excellent. All right. Daniel, you'll be across it all. We can follow your thoughts in the eye, one in the eye, and
et cetera.
And Matt, you'll be talking all over loads of it probably.
Yeah, not too much this week, actually. A bit of a relaxed week this week. But yeah, nice. do join us on Wednesday.
Absolutely. All right, super. You have a relaxed week yourself, listener. And catch up with you maybe tomorrow if you feel like it. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
I'm Andrew Slavin from the Totally Scottish Football Show, and I'm here to tell you why you should be listening to our Scottish show. Number one, it's full of insightful knowledge on Scottish football like this.
It looks to me as though they've spent all their time working on things in training. We go on the pitch and then you just forget it, which happens with players who aren't very good.
Number two, it's got Georgie Hadji's son. Number three, we get to talk about the spaghetti hag. Look into it, you should. Anyway, you'll find us every Tuesday morning, ready to inform you on the greatest league in world football. Just search for the Totally Scottish Football Show and we'll be there every Tuesday.
Muddy Knees Media.